Shalom, I am Rabbi Michael Pont, and this is For the Love of Judaism. And on today's episode, I have for you two sermons that I gave recently. This first one I gave just after the World Cup concluded in December, and it is a tribute to Lionel Messi, one of the greatest soccer players, certainly of his generation. You could argue one of the greatest soccer players of all time. He played beautifully in the World Cup, and he won for his country, for Argentina, his first World Cup victory in his illustrious career. Check it out.
Okay, everybody, Shabbat Shalom. So I have no idea how many people in here are soccer fans. The World Cup was incredibly entertaining. And one of the great stars of the World Cup is Lionel Messi of Argentina. And he had a big spotlight on him in the final game in the championship, which Argentina won. And he was a big part of that. Now, Messi, if you don't know soccer, Messi has been around for a long time. He's a 35-year-old veteran, and he's running around the pitch. He's running around with men who are much younger than him. So I thought, well, how is he keeping up with them? I mean, I know, like, I like to play basketball, and I'm 53, and if I try to play with just 40-year-olds, like, I'm out of breath in, like, 20 minutes. So I can't imagine how this guy is playing game after game, 90 minutes plus. How is he doing it? So a writer named Franklin Foer wrote in The Atlantic a tribute to Messi, and this is what he said. He said, without the legs to carry him, Messi economized his movements. Rather than pretending that he was a young man, he played like an older one. He ambled through games, saving himself for the moments that he could assert himself. He showed a remarkable awareness about how he might be able to parcel out his dwindling corporeal self. I love that. His dwindling corporeal self. It's a little bit of a depressing image, but it's true. How he needed to make choices about when to give himself fully. So he apparently, I mean, I didn't watch every match, and I just saw the very end of the shootout between France and Argentina. But apparently, if you watch Messi during the whole tournament, he was being very careful, because he knows he's older and he knows he can't keep up with all these young guys. So I was thinking about Messi, and in tribute to Lionel Messi, the old man at 35, I thought we would just go over a few Jewish teachings in praise of old age. First, you should know, does anybody know, actually, a little trivia, how old was Moses when he first went to Pharaoh? Anybody know? Well, think about it this way. Actually, you could do the math, right? He died at 120. They're in the desert for 40 years. The Torah says he was 80. Maybe the plagues came in rapid succession. Who knows? So he was 80 years old when God called on him, and when he first appeared before Pharaoh, he was a senior citizen already. So that's one text. There's a beautiful text in Leviticus. It's one of my favorite verses. I know rabbis say that about, but this really is one of my favorite verses. It says to rise up before the hoary head and beautify the face of the elderly person, and you shall fear your God. I am the Lord. In Hebrew, mipnei seva takum v'hadarta pnei zaken v'yareta me'elohecha ani Adonai. I especially like that part about v'hadarta pnei zaken. Hadarta means to beautify, to make beautiful. It could be interpreted in different ways, I guess. But that means when you look at an older person, you know, you shouldn't see, like, you know, someone who's all wrinkled and someone who's difficult and, you know, gives you a lot of service because you have to figure out, you know, how to take care of them and where they're going to live and all this stuff. You should see beauty in that older face, because that older face that maybe is a little wizened is the face of experience and wisdom. So I think that's part of what the Torah is trying to teach us there, to not get impatient with our elders. There's another text from Pirkei Avot that says, Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda says, one who learns from young ones is compared to what? To one who eats unripe grapes and drinks wine from its press. And one who learns from elders is compared to what? To one who eats ripe grapes and drinks aged wine. And Rabbi Yehuda adds, do not look at the jug, but rather at what is in it. I like that. I like that. And finally, this is another beautiful passage. And maybe you're familiar with this text or the idea. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi further advised, and this is in the Talmud, and be careful to continue to respect an elder who has forgotten their Torah knowledge due to circumstances beyond their control. Even though they are no longer a Torah scholar, they must still be respected for the Torah that they once possessed. As we say, both the tablets of the covenant and the broken tablets of the covenant are placed in the Ark of the Covenant in the temple. Even though the first tablets were broken, their sanctity obligates one not to treat them with contempt. An elder who forgot the Torah knowledge they once possessed is likened to these broken tablets. Well, Lionel Messi showed on the pitch that he did not forget his Torah knowledge. He showed that he could still play and he could still contribute. He adapted to best help Argentina, and it worked. So mazel tov, Argentina, for bringing home the World Cup. Yeah.
This second sermon I gave on Friday the 13th. And since it was Friday the 13th, I decided to talk about Jewish views on magic and superstition. Take a listen. Okay, everybody, Shabbat Shalom. So today is Friday the 13th. Uh-oh, it's Friday the 13th. Don't worry, we're in synagogue, so I'm pretty confident we're going to be okay. There's a lot of aura, a lot of bad mojo surrounding Friday the 13th. It was the title of a fairly successful horror movie franchise back in the, what was that, the 80s, 90s? Anybody remember that? They weren't very good movies, but you know, they made a lot of money. So where does this whole superstition and bad juju with Friday the 13th come from? Where does it come from? It comes from, really originally, it comes from the Christian Bible. Okay, so we have to know our Christian Bible a little bit. At the Last Supper, okay, the Last Supper, maybe it was a Passover Seder, maybe, right? How many people were there at the Last Supper? 13, right? Jesus and his 12 disciples, right? And one of them, Judas, of course, would betray Jesus. So that's where sort of that bad mojo with the number 13 comes from. Now, what's the problem with Friday? What day was Jesus crucified? He was on a Friday. So that is why, that is at least one origin story of why Friday the 13th carries this sort of bad energy, this bad energy. So taken separately, both Friday and the number 13 are thought to have this sort of negative connotation. That's where the Friday the 13th negativity comes from. Now, this is sort of a superstition, you know, that bad things are going to happen on Friday the 13th. Our tradition, getting back to Judaism, our tradition teaches us to be wary of superstition and magic. In the book of Deuteronomy, we are commanded specifically not to practice divination. Divination, I think, is when you hold out a stick and it's supposed to lead you to, you know, whatever your desire is. You're not supposed to be a soothsayer or an enchanter, a witch or a wizard, or a necromancer, someone who consults the dead. We're not supposed to do any of those things, right? Which were probably, usually when there's a commandment telling you not to do something, it means that people were tempted to do it. And in fact, in our tradition, we do have a number of superstitions, right? There are plenty of Jewish superstitions. Quite a few revolve around pregnancy and pregnant women. There's one that says that a pregnant woman is not supposed to go to a cemetery, right? That's supposed to be bad luck. Contact with the dead, if you're a pregnant woman, that's supposed to be not good. A nice tradition or superstition is that it's a custom, you know, when we, on tomorrow morning, we'll open the ark, it's a custom to give that honor to a woman who's pregnant so that everything will open, you know, the way it's supposed to, that she'll be blessed with her opening, if you will, right? Pregnant women. Nice. Was that too much? Too graphic? What? Do we need to know, is there an OBGYN here? Is there a, you know, okay. You never say, I lost my train of thought. You never say to a woman who's pregnant, you're not supposed to say mazel tov, right? Because the baby hasn't been born yet and you might be like, you know, pushing the luck a little bit, you're supposed to say Bisha'a Tova. Bisha'a Tova means in Hebrew, everything should happen at exactly the right time. Okay, so pregnant woman, you see her, don't say Mazel Tov. Say Mazel Tov once the baby is born. Before that, you should say Bisha'a Tova. That's a good one. I like that. Perhaps the most well-known Jewish superstition involves something called the evil eye, right? That someone can just look at you, give you, you know, the sort of the death stare, and bad things are going to happen to you. In Hebrew, it's called Ayin Hara, the evil eye, Ayin Hara. Have you ever seen someone like they'll spit three times or they'll say poo, 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 right? That's supposed to, I don't know where that comes from, but that's supposed to prevent or cancel out the evil eye, right? Poo, poo, poo. That's why people do that. So these superstitions like have power. Anyone ever heard anyone say Akinahora? What is that? Akinahora is actually sort of a contraction of Hebrew, ke'ein ayin hara. Kinahora, ke'ein ayin hara, which means ke, as if, ein, there isn't, the ayin hara. Kinahora, a kinahora is a good thing. It means ke'ein ayin hara, that there shouldn't be an ayin hara, an evil eye that's bothering you, that's disturbing you. A kinahora. Some people wear, right, the crimson ribbon, right? Madonna does that. They sell them at the wall. You wear a crimson ribbon that's supposed to ward off the evil eye. There are lots of these superstitions. There are so, so many. And the most famous magic word is what? Abracadabra. Abracadabra comes from Hebrew. Actually, the language Aramaic, which is a derivative of Hebrew. So abracadabra means abra. Bara means to create. So abra means I will create. It's the future form in Hebrew. Kedavra. Davra is diber, which means to speak. So abra, I will create. Kedabra, as I speak. I will create as I speak. That is the translation of abracadabra. And again, that's Hebrew Aramaic. Aramaic, again, is a derivative of Hebrew. And then below that, any Harry Potter fans? HP? I'm a big fan. Harry Potter, right? Voldemort? I know, we're not supposed to say his name, but he's dead, so we can say it. Voldemort, right, holds out his wand and says, abracadabra, right? That's how he says it, right? Avada Kedavra, right? That's the opposite of abracadabra. Avad in Hebrew means to destroy. Avada, I will destroy Kedavra as I speak. Okay, so abracadabra, I will create as I speak. Avada Kedavra, I will destroy as I speak. So even though the Torah says don't do this stuff, nevertheless, superstition has seeped into Jewish culture, and even the most popular words in magic come from Hebrew, which is pretty, pretty cool. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Shabbat Shalom.
I hope you enjoyed both of those sermons. About Lionel Messi, I think that he displayed some real humility in altering his game in what was, in a way that was best for his team and for his country. And the thoughts on magic and superstition, we Jews have a long and interesting history when it comes to those topics, especially superstition. And I hope that you enjoyed the take on abracadabra, which has Jewish origins. Anyway, everybody, thanks for listening and peace out.